the Milwaukee Journal sent the Milwaukee Brewers podcast. We're coming at you quite a bit later than we normally do. There have been some things going on here, namely the Milwaukee Bucks, but we're going to try Thursdays for a couple weeks in a row here. We've got to get you caught up on what's going on with the Brewers as they head out for the second half of the 2021 season. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, and on the other line is Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Since we last chatted, Todd, an awful lot has happened. The Brewers struggling in a four-game series at home against the Reds. That has changed the shape of the NL Central race a little bit. We've had an all-star game. We've had a draft. Lots of things have happened. But most importantly, Todd, have you been watching the Bucks? Have you been at the Deer District? I'm sure you've been up against the rails cheering with the masses there as the TV screens are playing, right?
Oh, I've been courtside.
Courtside? Of course you have. My bad.
I make that kind of money. You know, I can afford those seats, so...
Well, it's because you're best friends with Chance the Rapper, right? Or is it one of the Bucks legends you're friends with?
No, I've been hanging out with Kareem.
Kareem. Hopefully they're back for game six because they brought some good luck down game four. Obviously, you could check out the Milwaukee Bucks coverage at jsonline.com, the Bucks podcast with Jim Ozarski that I do. But there is another team in town that is a first place team, the Milwaukee Brewers. They went into that Reds series with a 7-game lead, and it has been shaved down now after the Reds took 3 of 4 against the Brewers. Even the Brewers' win was kind of dicey. They got a late homer from Avisail Garcia, but three tough losses with the offense struggling again. The Brewers' pitchers doing what they do, throwing up really limited amounts of offense from the Reds, and the Brewers just aren't able to score. And the Reds' pitching staff isn't anything special either. The two teams are going to meet for 3 games starting on Friday. Pretty crucial at this point. Where do you put the Brewers right now? I mean, a 4-game lead at the All-Star break coming into the season is great, 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 great. But considering they really had a chance to sort of really gain ground on the Cincinnati Reds and lost that opportunity with more opportunity to come, I don't know. Do you feel like the Brewers are where they should be, better than where they should be? How would you evaluate?
Well, I think if you look at the overall situation, coming into the season, if you would have said the Brewers would have a 4-game lead in the Central at the All-Star break, you'd be like, awesome. That's terrific. Great. But then you look at how that last series with the Reds transpired, and then you leave that going into the break feeling like a little bit of an opportunity was missed, not necessarily expecting to sweep the Reds, but, at least split, if not take 3 of 4, which makes the upcoming series in Cincinnati this weekend all that more crucial. And again, there's a lot of time left. A lot of things can happen. We're 2 or so weeks away from the trade deadline. Things will change there. But, I would say it's a little bit disappointing to lose 3 of 4 to the team that's chasing you at home going into the break. So, you said Cincinnati's pitching is not that great, but at the same time, it seems like they've really had the upper hand against the Brewers this season. Luis Castillo's typically been a Brewer killer, and aside from one start against the Brewers down there in that first series in May, he's pitched really well against the Brewers. This guy named Vladimir, he was tough on the Brewers and continues to be tough on the Brewers. And even old friend Wade Miley stuck it to him in Milwaukee going into the break. So their bullpen, I would say Cincinnati's bullpen is the weak point, but it's been pitching very well lately too, and really made those leads hold up for Cincinnati. So this is going to be a pretty critical series. And if the Brewers can go in there and somehow win 2 of 3, you walk out of there feeling pretty good. I think if you go down there and you get swept or you lose 2 of 3, all of a sudden, the race really tightens up, and then, puts a little bit more pressure on the Brewers, obviously, going into next week. So it should be a fun series one way or the other. I keep looking at the weather and I'm a little nervous about it. Of course, this is always the time where it rains down there, and it looks like there's a pretty good chance there's going to be some rain during the course of the series. So hopefully there's a minimal or no postponements. Let's just say that.
I think if they get swept, it's a major panic point for at least Brewers fans. Certainly, I'm sure the players will be able to soldier through, but to be up, like we said, 6 games and then up as many as 7 after they win game 1 of that Red Series, and then to suddenly have that lead whittled down to 1 over the course of, what would that be, 8 games or so, that's a really tough thing to have to overcome sort of mentally once you've built that lead. And with the Cardinals 8 games back, the Cubs 8 games back, and looking like a team that's suddenly going to sell, the Cardinals have really struggled. Certainly either one of those teams could get back into the mix, but honestly, I think if you're a Brewer fan, you feel good about thinking it might just be the two-horse race, the Milwaukee Brewers and Cincinnati Reds, and you got to like what the Brewers have because their pitching is just really has been just on another level. That trade deadline right around the corner, we talked about it. I've talked about it with Tom Hodricourt, with you as well. I just can't imagine Milwaukee isn't going to add a bat of some sort, you know, first base, even with the addition of Rowdy Tellez recently. First base is still kind of open. You know, you could get a lot more out of that spot. I don't know if third base is still on the table, but I got to think this team is going to be chasing after even some of the higher profile bats that would be available in the trade market. Have you, based on what you've heard from David Stearns or just kind of how you looked at it, do you see it like I see it? Like there's just got to be some offense coming into this organization, or could they potentially get by with what they have?
We haven't had a chance to talk to David Stearns in a bit. I would assume, you know, he'll make himself a little bit more available leading up to the trade deadline. Obviously, he's never going to fully display the hand that he's holding, but just going off past track record, my guess would be the Brewers will not only look to add another bat, but also try to bolster the bullpen. That's been a pretty standard move that they've tried to do going into the trading deadlines in years past. And with them being, out front in the division, Reds kind of pressing them, I would think it's going to be, I don't know, free for all is the right saying, but I would expect the Brewers to be very aggressive in trying to acquire some help at those need spots. And that's not even to say that the bullpen is really a need spot, because the bullpen, despite all the movement over the course of the season so far, all the different faces that have been down there, it's been performing pretty well. You can always get better. And, I would assume that they'd try to do so. But, you know, you mentioned the corners and specifically first base. That's a spot where you'd like to have, I think, a little bit more consistency, a little bit more of a power threat, somebody who's a little bit more established there. And, who's available, who's acquirable, that remains to be seen. But, don't dismiss out of hand, David Stearns likes to potentially acquire guys that have control as well. So it might not be necessarily a big name type guy, but maybe somebody who's kind of coming into his own and a guy that they can look to as potentially playing that position for a few years moving forward. So it's always a fun time of year. There are always fun conversations to have, who's going to wind up where. To me, the real interesting thing, like you kind of brought up, was, Cubs and Cardinals, you would think are going to be in complete sell mode at this point, and they've got some pretty nice talent. Could they ever look to the Brewers and swing a trade in the division? That'd be very interesting. I would doubt it, but I would guess that lots of Brewer fans would like to see Chris Bryant in a Brewer uniform. Do you imagine that?
Yeah, or Anthony Rizzo. Those two guys would be, Bryant especially, but like those two guys would be perfect for what the Brewers are looking for. Yeah. And it's just a matter of whether the Cubs want to do it. Maybe they're a little more receptive to it because it's not likely those guys stay in Milwaukee beyond this season. And if this year is lost, what does it matter what the rest of the Central is doing? But I don't know. I just find it. I find it very hard to believe that that's something that that the Cubs would be willing to do.
Agreed. But it's fun to throw those possibilities out there. I mean, you could put Bryant at first base. He's played first base there before. A very versatile guy. He can play some outfield for you. Can play third, obviously. To me, he's almost a better fit than Rizzo in that respect, with the way the Brewers like to utilize guys. And, obviously the question becomes, what do you have to give up to get them? And I'm sure the Cubs are going to be pushing for, some high ceiling talent. And, would the Brewers be willing to give up some really good prospects to a divisional opponent to acquire Bryant? That's the other interesting part of that as well. But again, we've got a couple weeks to figure this out. It's always fun to kind of think about the what ifs, but this will obviously be a conversation that's going to be had until the deadline actually reaches us, which is a day earlier this year on July 30th.
You made a good point, though, about that bullpen last couple of years. Some under-the-radar selections. Xavier Cedeño back in 2018 didn't really work out, but that was somebody who could have ended up having a big role as a left-hander. They picked him up at the end of August, I believe. Jordan Lyles, Drew Pomeranz, two of the bigger acquisitions in 2019. They weren't sexy pickups necessarily at the time. Brewers gave up a lot to get Pomeranz, and he ended up being one of the most reliable relievers for them in that 2019 season where they go to the wild card game. So there's a chance that that we do get some arms into Milwaukee as well that add to the picture, like you said. The arms that they already have are very good. We saw that in the All-Star game on Tuesday. Corbin Burns got to work two innings, which is pretty sweet. I'm not sure a Brewers pitcher's gone two innings since, you know, maybe back in like the Larry Sorensen days, but he did end up taking the loss, gave up a titanic blast to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and a couple runs ended up being the American League ended up holding on from there and winning. But Freddy Peralta, three strikeouts, struck out all three guys he saw on 12 pitches, a great sort of national stage for him. He has been so good, and we've talked about him a lot, but, you know, for the first time, this kind of dawned on me. I think Brandon Woodruff is probably the answer to this question, but as I look ahead, if this Brewers team goes to the postseason and you're trying to imagine which pitcher is going to be that first guy that you throw out there game one of any series, you know, like I said, Woodruff is the reliable guy, and some of this boils down to what's happening at the end of the season. Are they able to set their rotation or whatever? But Freddy Peralta is getting to the point now, Todd, where I'm starting to think, is he their best pitcher? He's not yet. He's not, because Woodruff has been amazing, but he's surpassed Corbin Burns in my mind. And I just did not see this coming. It's to the point where I'm wondering, like, if you want to talk about an ace, Freddy Peralta is like approaching that territory. And the All-Star game, that's just one outing, but that still exemplifies what he's been able to do. The limited number of hits he's given up this year. Heck, he might be the guy you turn to with the season on the line in the postseason. He's just been so much more reliable than I envisioned he would be this year. What a story he's been.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good word. Reliable, consistent is another word. You know, when you look at the string of starts that he's put together, pretty much you're going to come out with six innings and, you know, two or fewer runs, a couple hits. You know, the command is the one thing that's still a little bit shaky. You know, he has a tendency to, you know, issue walks at a little bit higher rate than you would like. That's really picking nits at this point. It's really been incredible to see the progress that he's made. And, you know, I think a case can be made that you know, he has surpassed at least Corbin Burns in my eyes as, like, you know, kind of the number two guy in that rotation. I think just based off of Brandon Woodruff's overall body of work, you know, the experience that he's had in big moments, that sort of thing. I think he's the unquestioned ace, but Freddie's really in that conversation. You know, one, let's say Woodruff is one and, you know, Freddie could be 1A, that kind of deal. It's really a nice problem to have when you have three guys that are just so good. And this is really what the Brewers were hoping for. There were definitely some growing pains along the way for all three of the guys, particularly Corbin Burns. But, you know, if you're talking a, you know, first round divisional playoff series, what an incredible three to be able to throw out there. You know, you feel good with all three of those guys on the mound. And just thinking ahead to the series in Cincinnati this weekend, of course, there's still a lot of baseball to be played, but, you know, there's no denying that it's a huge series. You know, you would expect the Brewers to come out with their best three. We haven't been told a you know, order yet for the rotation, but, you know, if the Brewers do come out with Woodruff, Burns and Peralta in whatever order that is, you know, you feel really, really good about their chances down there. And that's just something that the Brewers, anybody who's followed the Brewers for any amount of time, it's just kind of like a foreign feeling, you know, like you always just hope that the offense would be able to, you know, hit three or four homers and score eight runs and overcome the pitching that they had. And now it's really the opposite. It's the pitching that's keeping them in games. And you're really hoping for the offense to produce, you know, just enough to get them over the hump. So it's again, fun conversations to have and really been remarkable to watch the development of those three guys.
Yeah, Brewers 53 and 39 at the break. And a lot of that has to do with that starting rotation. And you hear this a lot now. This is a team that if they get to the postseason, which is not a given by any means, but if they do, they might have as good a chance to win the World Series as any Brewers pitching team before it. 2018, they go to Game 7 of the NLCS. You got to say that team was close to that level, but they were, you know, Yoli Chacin, and they were kind of patching things together with guys that you weren't. Wade Miley was having a really good year, but I don't know if that necessarily would have told people that's a team that can win the whole thing. And now with this pitching, I mean, every game could be a 3-1, 2-0 game. That's what you want in the postseason. One guy they also have at the back of their bullpen who did not appear in the All-Star game is Josh Hader. He's pitched in an All-Star game before. The Brewers are probably okay with that. He really struggled at the end of last week. For the first time this season, Hader ran into some difficulty. He gave up a home run in New York on that doubleheader to close out the midweek series. Jose Peraza, of all people, former Cincinnati Red for that matter, who took him deep. That snapped his streak of 20 consecutive saves for the 2021 season. Hard to feel too bad about that. That's one homer, bound to happen sooner or later. He's bound to blow a save sooner or later. But he then gives up a couple games in a row, not save situations, but two runs in the ninth on Sunday, that last game before the All-Star break, where he struggled. He didn't even get through the inning, gave up a couple hits and a walk. The day before that, he gives up a home run in the ninth inning to Eugenio Suarez, old foe, who's always a thorn in the Brewers' side. Again, that snapped a scoreless game in the ninth, 4-3. Then the Reds win that game. He did get a save in there, but it wasn't his sharpest, but whatever, saves a save. Where's your concern meter on Josh Hader? That's just a bad weekend for a guy who's been nails all season long. But, you know, you stack three or four of those outings in a row and it starts to feel like something could have changed. Do you feel any concern whatsoever with him?
Are you asking if Josh Hader's leaking oil?
Yes, I'm asking if Josh Hader's leaking oil. Is that a cliche that you see a lot?
That's Tom's go-to line. That's what he likes to say about guys that are struggling a little bit. But, no, I don't really think there's anything to worry about with Josh Hader. You know, the guy, he's not infallible. As you mentioned, he is human, and even the best of the best are going to give up games from time to time. It stands out a little bit more because of the three games that he struggled out of the last four that he pitched, and, you know, giving up the homer to Peraza and so forth. But I don't think anybody can really argue with the usage or the overall effectiveness of Josh Hader this season. The Brewers have settled into a very predictable pattern for him, which allows him to just close games, just pitch the ninth. He knows what to expect. He's got a workout regimen that allows him to be available more because he's throwing overall fewer pitches. And it's worked out for both sides really well. The guy is still one of the best in the game. And I would fully expect that with, what do we have here? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So he's going to have a decent amount of rest going into the second half, going into Friday's game. Should be ready to go and ready to turn the page on what happened. And that's the one thing about Josh Hader that and great closers that you admire is the fact that they can turn the page on some really brutal losses, blown saves, and, you know, giving up homers to Jose Peraza in a game where you were almost going to beat Jacob deGrom. You have to have a short memory to do that job, and he definitely does. So don't think there's anything to worry about there. To me, a big key in the second half here and going down the stretch, a huge help would be getting the old Devin Williams back and, you know, not necessarily expecting him to be just, you know, inhuman like he was in 2020, but, you know, being a little bit more consistent. It seems like every time he goes out there and throws a 1-2-3 inning and strikes out two, then the next two or three outings are kind of shaky. You know, he's walking a couple guys, giving up some hard contact. He just has not been able to dial it in for an extended period of time. If you can get Devin Williams back to being the Devin Williams, close to the Devin Williams of 2020, you know, to me, then you're really talking about something. Then you've got, you know, Brad Boxberger you can throw in the seventh. He's really been reliable. All of a sudden, you know, you get six really good innings from your starter, you have the lead, and then you can pretty much chalk up another win. That's what, if you go back to all the way back to the 2011 team after the Brewers picked up K-Rod, you had Takashi Saito or LaTroy Hawkins in the seventh. You had Frankie in the eighth, and then you had Axford in the ninth. I mean, that was that was pretty much a done deal at that point. And that team did not have nearly the starting pitching that this team does. So, you know, if you can really lock down Devin Williams there in the eighth, you feel good about Boxberger in the seventh, Hader in the ninth, you know, and you get six out of your starter, you're doing really well. So it's going to be fun to watch everything kind of play out as the next couple months unfold here.
Looking at Christian Yelich, you guys wrote a lot on him this past week. He sort of had a session with hitting coach Andy Haynes. He's been very candid about his struggles over the last two seasons. He talked about a stretch of 400 at bats, but for this season and last season, his slugging is actually his OPS and slugging have both gone down from even the 2020 season. They're as low as they've been since he was a first or second year player in the league. I think he's only got. What does he have for extra base hits? I think 14 extra base hits this year. He's missed some time, so that has to be factored in. But, you know, by comparison, he had, I believe, 29 home runs at the All-Star break in 2019, which, of course, is a All-Star caliber, or I should say MVP caliber season where he didn't miss time. But that's just a pretty stark contrast. And obviously, we've talked a lot. He's had a couple ailments that have bothered him this year. He's slumping, you know, like it goes beyond the injury thing. But I guess the elephant in the room that we haven't really hit on precisely is he just hasn't been the same since this knee injury that he sustained toward the end of the 2019 season. And I'm sure you could also point to the data point of, well, he signed the big extension. That's going to be something on people's minds too. But you wonder, because and he isn't 100% forthcoming about some of the things he's worked out or some of the complexities of what he's trying to do. But I guess you'd have to wonder, is there something there mentally where he's concerned about hitting a ball off of his kneecap again, like he did in September of 2019? It cost him the rest of that season and certainly put him behind the eight ball going forward. You know, you got to talk about the pandemic. You talk about the back injuries that he's had, although he had something like that in 2018 too. But I don't know if that's fair to put on him, but it's something that I'm sure I'm not the only one who's noticed. That seems to be the pivot point. where things started to maybe go wrong. Does that enter your thought process at all, or do you think there's just way more to it?
No, I think that's way too simplistic. And, you know, obviously the timing of it makes sense. You know, his play really dropped off after that. But number one, there's no way the Brewers would let him out there playing if there was any kind of question or issue about his knee. And I think maybe whatever trepidation he had about it probably went away in spring training of 2020, when, you know, he knew he was able to go out there and, you know, perform and had no more issues with it. I mean, hitting a ball off your knee, that's like a, you know, how often do you really see that? It does not happen very often.
Yeah, it's a fluke thing for sure.
Yeah, a total fluke thing. So to me, it's just, I think, a combination of things. You know, the back is obviously been something that's been bothering him, and it's been become much more, seems like, acute this year. At least now he's able to be in the lineup every day, and it seems like they have a, you know, a recovery and a strengthening and a rehab program that works for him and is able to keep him in the lineup most days. Craig Counsell's, we all know, he did this with Ryan Braun, very proactive about getting Yelich and some of his other guys, you know, kind of prescribed days off for rest to nip things in the bud before they might occur. But I think a lot of this is just lost confidence. And it's amazing to see a guy who really owned the NL for, you know, the second half of 2018, all of 2019, and just all of a sudden to see those quotes the other day coming from him saying, I'm just learning how to hit again. It's really, it's shocking. It's startling to hear, to read, you know, comments from a guy who was so good to say that. And it's really revealing, because I don't think many guys who struggle like that are really that honest about it. But for whatever reason, he's not able to get the ball in the air. He's not driving the ball like he used to when he was really good. And, you know, rolling over on a lot of stuff, hitting a lot of ground balls. It's kind of reminiscent of his days with the Marlins, and not that we watched that many games of his, but, you know, just looking at the ground ball rate and stuff from when he played with Miami, that's kind of what he was. Now, granted, he was still a 300 hitter and was still producing, but he's just in this, it seems like, this never ending cycle of either walking because he's not getting pitches to hit, striking out or hitting a ground ball. It's you know, kind of a three true outcome, and none of the three are really what you expect out of a guy who's making, you know, 20 plus million a year and is a, you know, former MVP. So, you know, for the it would be incredible for the Brewers from their perspective to get him on track, and all of a sudden, you know, going into August, getting him to really swing at a hot bat. And just think about what that would do for that lineup, how it would lengthen it out. You know, then it becomes a question of, you know, our team's going to continue to pitch away from him, because you really have nobody in front of him or behind him that is going to protect him like he did in 2018 and 19. So there's a lot of factors at play, but there's no question he's not the Christian Yelich of old, not driving the ball, and just kind of remains to be seen if and when that guy is going to eventually show up again.
Yeah, that's really one of the storylines of the second half, I think. It'll be able to go a long way all by himself to improving their offensive situation. We like I mentioned earlier, we had a draft since we last chatted. It was very weird timing. Sunday night it started during, I mean, they couldn't have predicted when the NBA Finals games were going to be held, but it's during an NBA Finals game. So it kind of happened under the cover of darkness, right as the All-Star break is about to kick in, which maybe on its face isn't such a bad time to do it during that sort of that middle part of the season. But the Brewers, they draft Sal Frelick out of Boston College. He's their first round pick. Probably more interesting for me as somebody who covered prep sports for a long time is their selection of Louisville outfielder Alex Benelis, who is a former Oak Creek High School standout, infielder outfielder guy. He had a great career in high school and has been at Louisville now for a few years, and I enjoyed that. But I know you got to sort of look at some of the prospects, talk to some of the Brewers front office personnel in charge of that side of things. Anybody jump out at you, or anything jump out at you? Any trend about this year's draft class?
Well, the first 2 days it was specifically college guys. You know, it took us all the way back to, I think, the late 30s round of 2019 that the Brewers had drafted a high school kid before they went into day three and opened up with a high school kid outfielder named Rock Riggio of Thousand Oaks High School, California, which I believe is also Christian Yelich's hometown. And then they proceeded to pick a number of high ceiling high schoolers the rest of that third day to, you know, basically they're hoping that out of the seven high school kids that they drafted, that they can probably sign, you know, two, three, maybe four of them, because almost all of them have scholarship offers to really big schools like Arizona State. Rock Riggio is committed to Oklahoma State. So the Brewers, by going college heavy early, they were able to save themselves some signing bonus money, and they can throw a little bit more at some of these high schoolers to try to get them to sign. You know, looking at the guys that they went early with, you know, Frelick and Tyler Black both were projected to go much higher than the Brewers. Well, maybe not Frelick so much, but Tyler Black especially was projected to go higher. I think the Brewers are very happy with those two guys. If they're looking to start a intramural basketball team, their second rounder Russell Smith, 6'9". You know, they've got a good center there, big left-handed pitcher from TCU.
I love that they drafted a 6'9" guy and Frelick's a 5'9" guy, so they got both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, and then you go all the way down to the last pick in the 20th round. They drafted 28-year-old kid who was a semi-pro kid, almost not a kid really, but he was a semi-pro basketball player in the Dominican Republic. He's 6'7", so they've got a good 1-2 punch there if they want to play some hoops. But you know, you mentioned Benelis. That's a great, interesting local angle. You know, the quotes were just amazing. That's as a writer, that's what you pray for when you know, when there's some type of news like that. He was just incredible and incredibly moved by being picked by the hometown team, and you know, a kid that obviously you root for to make it all the way, because heck, what a story that would be. So, you know, I think the Brewers overall are pleased with what they landed. They were able to get some young arms. They were able to get some up the middle talent, which is what they're always going for, it seems like. Guys who can play center field, guys who can play shortstop. So overall, I think that probably the best thing is the fact that the draft has been cut in half now in terms of length. You know, rather than 40 rounds, we're going 20 rounds. That's a little bit more realistic, and then teams can start signing undrafted free agents, basically like the NFL, like they do. You know, it's kind of a run on guys the next few days after that, and you try to land priority guys and so forth. So it's definitely a different setup. Like you mentioned, the timing of the draft is really kind of stupid. You know, having it right during the All-Star break and everything, stretching it out. I think they're trying to make it more like the NFL draft, and I just don't see how that computes. It's just so different from the NFL draft. But you know, but baseball has obviously been showing a propensity to think outside the box a little bit, and this is another area, and we'll see if that continues moving forward. But just another kind of exciting thing and interesting thing for people to watch, aside from the guys playing in the All-Star game over the break.
Yeah, and Rob Manfred saying a couple of those tweaks might be reverting. I'm not sure how long we're going to see guys starting at second base in extra innings anymore, or if we're what was the other big rule that they decided? I'm drawing a blank now.
Shit, well, they're talking about shifting, you know, like
Right.
banning the shift, that sort of thing. The extra innings, you know, no more 7-inning games, no more starting runners on second base, which as reporters, as beat writer, at least for me, I'm bummed out by that news, because that was awesome. You knew for a fact you weren't going to be sitting there for 5.5 hours waiting for Orlando Arcia to single in Jordan Lyles to beat the Pittsburgh Pirates, you know, at 2 in the morning, like that one time. So yeah, it was always nice too, being on the road and on a getaway day, having to catch a flight, knowing that we weren't going to have to sit through you know, potentially a 4.5 hour game. But I understand why baseball would want to go back to that, you know, traditionalism and all that stuff. But from a selfish standpoint, I'm a little bummed out to hear that news.
I imagine the player. I'm kind of surprised, because I would imagine the managers and teams themselves are attracted to the idea of avoiding 15, 16 inning games, because it's so hard on your bullpen and your pitching staff. I would think that a lot of teams would just assume punt onto game, win or lose, and move on to the next one. But yeah, so that might be this might be the last year of that, assuming there's baseball in 2022. There's a lot to sort through there. But before I let you go, just maybe any other thoughts you have. I mentioned Rowdy Tellez earlier. Actually, we haven't podcast since the Brewers traded for him from the Toronto Blue Jays in exchange for Trevor Richards. So maybe that's one area. I mean, Eric Lauer's had three really quality starts in a row, and that's pretty promising right now for the Brewers, who, you know, seem to they have those three big guns. But you know, now you've got other guys you can rely on too. That's making things even better. Or anybody else that you wanted to bring up that strikes you right now?
Yeah, well, the Lauer thing is interesting to me, especially from the standpoint of the way Luis Urias has played this season. You know, he's only four homers behind Aubie Garcia for the team lead. You know, second on the team in RBIs behind Garcia, and playing a pretty darn good defensive third base. So, you know, you take Lauer pitching well, Luis Urias showing the promise that the Brewers thought he had when they traded for him, and all of a sudden that trade with the Padres doesn't look quite so bad. You know, people were very quick to write that off as, you know, oh, the Brewers got snookered. And yes, you know, Trent Grisham has turned out to be a really good player. Padres used Zach Davies to turn around and get Yu Darvish. But, you know, it looks like the Brewers definitely have a couple of keepers in Urias and Lauer out of that trade, which is a good deal for them. And to me, I think the what's going to be key here in the second half coming out of the break is the fact that looks like Colton Wong is going to be back, if not Friday, then probably Saturday. And also Lorenzo Cain is getting closer to a return. He's been doing a minor league rehab stint with Nashville. He was given a couple days off during the break to go home, but that'll ramp back up here pretty soon, I think. I think actually today he's going to be down there, if I remember right. But getting those two guys back in the lineup obviously lengthens that out, and you want to keep them healthy. That's the biggest thing. You know, both of those guys have been on and off the IL all year. When they're healthy, they're definitely difference makers, both offensively and defensively. You know, if you can keep them on the field, lengthens the lineup, gives you better defense, and you know, then you're feeling a little bit better about your chances. So, you know, Travis Shaw, you know, he's probably a little bit further down the priority list, but you know, he's got to be getting closer to a return as far as getting back on the field and swinging from that dislocated shoulder. So, just getting back to closer to full strength, is obviously a good thing, and it may wind up helping David Stearns decide what kinds of trades he tries to swing here going into the trade deadline. So that's what really sticks out to me. And kudos to Jace Peterson for getting the Brewers through this these spells with Colton Wong on the IL. I mean, the guy's just been incredible. The way he's the at bats, the quality at bats he puts up, the way he's swung the bat. Defensively, he's been decent. Just a heck of a story, heck of a acquisition to bring him back after last season. And not to say that the guy's an all-star or anything, but the Brewers DFA'd him earlier this year, and anybody else could have claimed him, and nobody did. So he was able to stay in the organization, and has turned out to be a really, really key piece to kind of keep the Brewers in first place in the division moving forward. So that's what I would say.
Yeah, Colton Wong, at this point, I guess Brewers fans might be concerned that it's just going to be like this, that the injuries he's had now, three separate ones here in this season. He's so effective when he's in there, and obviously huge, huge benefit to get him back. But is this going to pop up again? I'm sure people are wondering. And Lorenzo Cain, obviously at a point in his career where injuries are going to be part of the picture. But Jackie Bradley Jr., a guy who just never got it going offensively, goes into the break with a 532 OPS, 167 batting average. Love his defense. I think Giannis might have just trumped him for best Milwaukee Sports Defensive Play of the Year. Jackie had a pretty great one earlier, but Lorenzo Cain getting back there, that should also help the offense. That might be just what the doctor ordered. He is Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can find everything he has at jsonline.com. He will be there rain or shine in Cincinnati this weekend at Great American Ballpark. A critical series for the Brewers, four games ahead of those Cincinnati Reds, going head to head for three more to kick off the second half. Thanks for joining us, Todd. We're going to talk again next week.
JR, I can't wait, and always a pleasure.
Again, it'll be Thursday next week. Of course, the NBA Finals, that could be the day after the NBA Finals, I believe. No, the day of Game 7 of the NBA Finals. So we'll see, but that's the plan right now. You can find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Thanks for giving us a listen, and we'll be back again next week on the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. Take care.